Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. There's your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Miles Madden, who is the senior marketing lead for the enterprise segment over at 1Password. Miles, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, great to be here. I've got to say, Mason, I love your radio voice. Every time I listen to you, I'm like, this, I envy.
You're far too kind, and I'm actually thankful that sounds like you listen. So thank you for being one of the listeners, and I'm excited. For those of you that are listening in, maybe at a 1Password competitor, I'll go ahead and disappoint you. We will not be talking through 1Password ABM secrets today. We're just going to talk through the other three times that Miles built ABM from the ground up. So I'm excited to dig into it because, I mean, with 1Password, this is fourth time building from ground up. And I'm confident that a lot of the things that share still work, obviously, today in our current market. So that said, what I always like to start with is ABM, very obviously focused on the account level. There are so many ways in which people have actually built that initial target account list or actually like determined their, even their ICP just for the program in and of itself. So I'm curious from your experience, like how are you typically going about determining the targets for the program?
Yeah, this is so good. So like you said, three organizations building this from the ground up. I have a lot of battle scars from this. I've learned a lot. There's things that I thought were right that I probably communicated 2 or 3 years ago that I was so wrong about. So that's what you're getting here. I found that going into these organizations, and for context, I think this may be helpful. I've primarily worked in Series B, Series C organizations with multiple hundreds of millions in funding. And so if you're in growth or ABM for that kind of organization, this is like probably going to be the best episode for you. If you're earlier stage, there's going to be a lot for you. If you're later stage where you maybe don't have as much freedom, there's still going to be some nuggets in here, but early stage, Series B, C, this is going to be a goldmine, hopefully. What I found when going into these organizations and kind of kicking off ABM, what I thought was the right approach originally was over-educating. I remember in the first few orgs, I had this really, really cool ABM maturity model, which was like, here's phase one, phase two, phase three. They had cool names like foundations. Stage three was like scale. And then each phase had different categories like marketing and sales alignment and tactics, reporting, technology, headcount. It was really, really cool. And I found that I would have these meetings. Of course, when you're in these Series B, Series C, you begin to have more and more people. You've got rev ops, you've got marketing ops, you've got analytics, you've got your sales leaders, business development goes on and on. And what I found, you get all these people in this room, getting them in a room, number one, was hard. You'd have this really cool presentation and you would get 20 minutes in and it would be like glossy eyes. Everyone's got crazy targets. They've got a million projects. And you are basically re-educating them on ABM, which usually does not land very well because especially when you're dealing with these leaders, right? They've been in the field for 10, 15, 20 years. ABM, hearing ABM is not the first time. And so when they see this ABM maturity model, maybe it's the first time they've seen ABM presented this way, but they're having to unlearn and relearn based on what they heard over the past 10, 15 years. And to keep it real with you, Mason, I mean, there's a lot of bad ABM out there. I'm sure you've seen this, and this is no indictment on anyone. It's really hard to do really hard ABM. We're all trying to figure it out. I'm sure I was one of those bad ABM people at some point, but because of that, all these different stakeholders, they've been communicated differently. They've heard all the different acronyms, and it's very confusing. And so starting this by over-educating just creates more confusion. You lose people right away. And so I give that context because going in and starting ABM from the ground up now, what I recommend is getting in there and immediately meeting with your sales leader. And as long as they're tenured, as long as they've been there for at least a year plus, ask them exactly what use case is driving pipeline and revenue for you right now. if they're like a semi-decent sales leader, which I'm sure like 90% of us are working with sales leaders that at least have a good idea of one use case that's performing really well, they will give you a very clear answer as to what that use case is. And so I'm sure we'll go through this episode what to do, but very first thing, don't waste too much time building out all these cool decks and this cool ABM maturity model or long document that defines everything. Start, meet with your sales leader, have them walk you through one use case that is working really, really well. You need to start there.
Yeah, I almost, if your organization's already done ABM a couple of times, I have actually made quite a few posts that are like, don't call it ABM. Like, call it literally anything else, because people have this associated baggage. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, almost to some extent, like, yes, you need sales buy-in, but kind of do it in stealth. And, like, don't make this big, like, we're going to launch this mass. It's just, like, just do it with, like, a couple of reps, show that it works, and then kind of tell people afterwards, like, hey, this is what we did, and this was awesome. Like, we should do this across everybody. I found that works way better, unless it's coming from top down, at which point do the big to do.
That is a really great point. And that's where usually the outcome of this, usually it's a 3 or 4 month long pilot, if you will, but 100%. I found what's worked best in stealth. You launch this, you take care of the tactics and the names and everything from the sales and RevOps and a few other stakeholders from their perspective. Oh, marketing is just running a campaign on this use case that is performing really well for us. And usually it performs much better than previous campaigns or programs that you've run. And when you present it 3 or 4 months down the road of here's the pipeline it created, not just the amount, because sometimes you can get, you know, one whale and you say it works, but it's like maybe, you know, you just had one deal that really knocked it out of the park. I like to show the pipeline amount and count. So not only did it drive a substantial amount of pipeline, but also this is repeatable. Like, it drove a handful of opportunities. This just wasn't some one-off opportunity maybe we got lucky with. And then the efficiency of that. I personally like to use cost per to acquire $1 of pipeline, which kind of shows the efficiency and shows it to previous programs. If you show that, if you show your stakeholders, we ran with this use case, here's the results. It ran for this long, and this is how it compares to the other things that we're doing. I mean, you're going to have the good problem of both the segment you're working on. I specialize in enterprise. They're going to want to do more and more of this. They're going to be bought in. And then usually what I found is if you have multiple segments or maybe multiple products, depending on your org structure, like, word gets out and all of a sudden you have a bunch of people coming to you like, hey, what did you guys do? Can I see the campaign plan? Or
it sounds like essentially, and I think of ABM programs that are starting in two pretty basic categories of like vertical specific or problem specific. And it sounds like when you think about like, here's a use case, here's the problem that we actually solved. Are you just looking at all the deals that closed around that specific use case and then figuring out from there the firmographics that you could target or growth stage or anything along those lines?
Yeah, this is a really good question. So usually where it starts is the sales leader says, hey, this is the use case that's working. Usually my follow-up to that is, can you actually send me the customers or the accounts? And there's usually, of course, depending on your volume, they send you usually at least 5. It works, at least in my experience with the sales leaders I've been, every time they're able to send you at least 5. You can then review those Salesforce opportunities and accounts, and you can pull out the data that is related to that use case that allows you to pull a report. It's totally different. It could be in the AE notes. It could be in the closed one. Like, there's a bunch of ways where you can find this use case. Sometimes there's drop downs, maybe there's a use case field. But so find out, you find that, because then you can work with RevOps or marketing operations to pull a report of all of the accounts. So either opportunities, whether closed won or closed lost, and then customers that had that use case tied to them. I like to start there and then review, basically take the top customers or opportunities based on, there's a few things which we can get into that, but then review those and deeply understand those to deeply understand the use case. Now, you had asked like problem specific or industry specific. In terms of cybersecurity, which is where I specialize in, I find a majority of the time in this industry, it's usually problem specific, regardless of industries. Like they typically share the same problems. It's less, more industry agnostic, I should say. But when I worked in the industry that sold to call centers, industry actually worked much better in that instance. So usually the use case that a sales leader would surface would be more verticalized. Like they'd be like, you know, retail, this is usually the issues they're experiencing versus, I don't know, hospitality, for example. So that's really dependent on the sales leader, but you've got to pull the data, you've got to pull the reports, and we'll get into maybe what that research process looks like alongside your product marketing leader, but you've got to start by building those.
In summary, talk to sales, get use cases, get 5 to 10 actual examples, and then look at the similarities between those examples to then actually use that to inform a starting target account list. So from there, we actually want to do research on those accounts. So I'd actually love for you to just walk through, like, what's the research process that helps you determine these are the right channels to even engage these audiences in?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, I'll put this in two parts. Number one, there's a part of like deeply understanding the use case, and then there's how you actually distribute this to the market. In my opinion, the biggest growth lever is deeply understanding the use case. Where I failed in the past is where I do not deeply understand the use case. And then when I go, number one, to work with marketing stakeholders, I confuse them because I don't quite understand it to myself. And then when it comes to enabling the field on, that's a whole nightmare because they can easily tell that you do not understand the use case, and they've experienced the use case. They've actually sold these accounts, and so you lose buy-in. So the first thing I'll say is you need to work with your product marketer so you have someone to talk about this with. You have to review the gong calls first. You actually have to hear them speak, hear them explain their problems, hear the context around the problem. And then what I like to do is I like to go and look externally at all the content that is related to this problem. Let's say, to use a basic example, let's say you're selling to a cybersecurity team, their organization just raised a large series of funding. There's changes that happen with that, and you need to go read as much content as you can to understand what that situation looks like. So you need to become an expert of the use case. When you do that, the trickle-down effect, this is one of the core reasons why this program will work. In my opinion, the biggest growth lever is deeply understanding the customer, which allows you to target the right personas with the right messaging, et cetera. Now, in terms of the distribution of it, so we've got, you know, we have our target account list, we know what personas, we know their pain points and associated value props per persona. Then it's, of course, we'll get into what content works and how you map that content to the different stages, but the distribution of it, how I personally like to approach it is distribute it across as many channels as possible. Just to give that coverage, there's always going to be channels that work better than others, but there's something about wherever you go, seeing the brand with that message, speaking to it. We all use different channels. Like there's commonalities, you know, a lot of marketers use LinkedIn, but I love Substack. I've got other friends that likes media publications. I personally like to go across as many channels as possible. Now, again, this is where the context matters. I've been in Series B, Series C organizations where we have those resources, and then pick one or two channels to deeply focus on. So personally, what I like to focus on within the cybersecurity field is usually field marketing or more on the influencer marketing side. But that's where you go deep. You go deep into the tactics. You have a very clear experimentation plan. And those are kind of your big bet channels that are going to drive the most engagement and influence the most pipeline.
Yeah, I've always heard ABM is just trying to do surround sound on your target accounts. So essentially, if your target account lives there, be there. And this is one of the things that we did as an agency. Like, so I'm in a bunch of communities and I just like answer a bunch of questions in communities. And then they see me on LinkedIn, they listen to the podcast. So like, I've actually heard that quite a few times of like, I just feel like you're everywhere. And in reality, I'm actually in shockingly few places, but they're always where our target accounts live.
Exactly. And that is, I mean, you touch on something that I personally really appreciate and subscribe to, which is like the best way to understand where your customers and prospects are to integrate into their life. So follow the right people, and do that pretty consistently. What I mean by that is if I met with one of our a key persona at one of our target accounts right now, I could jump on a call with them and be like, hey, did you see what Francis posted yesterday? Or did you see the latest breach that happened? Were you watching cybersecurity headlines? So the research phase of what channels to be on, or it's not really a research phase anymore. I'm so integrated into where they consume content that I already have some level of degree of confidence of what channels to be on and also what to talk about.
Yeah, it's I worked at a lending software company. And for those of you that don't know, I really love Dave Ramsey. So I like hated working there. And it was just like really tough to actually do marketing. But I mean, Miles, what you're outlining is it sounds like you actually just really like the cybersecurity space. So it's not really even that you are doing this necessarily just because you love to engage with your target accounts, but you actually find the space interesting and you enjoy the work, which then makes engaging with target accounts way easier because you can function as a peer versus a poser.
That's exactly. This is something that I had to learn through, candidly. I worked, like I said, for a call center AI company years ago, and really great leadership team, great colleagues, really enjoyed my time there. The one thing that I did not like is I hate the call center industry. It's incredibly boring to me. Some people, it's exciting, but I found my lack of enthusiasm for the industry impacted the performance for the business. I didn't really want to understand the buyer. Like I said, I did. But I didn't do the research, or when I tried, see a text from my friend, and I'm like, one sec, I'm going to text them back. Versus cybersecurity. Yeah. Yes, this is where I'll be specializing, and this is what I love. And my wife hates it, but we're driving in the car to Disney World. We live in Orlando, and cybersecurity headlines playing, right? Like hearing what breaches happened yesterday or instance, which definitely gives you an advantage when you're architecting an ABM program.
So as we then think about, you've nailed down understanding the buyer, being where they are, we now and then need to create specific content that engages them in such a way that moves them from awareness into opportunity acquisition. So how do you think about content mapping and ensuring you've got the right content for your audiences?
Yeah. Well, first off, let's start by saying you think you have the right content for your audience. You're never going to know until you launch it. You launch a few pieces and you actually see what's landing. Like I said, you can have a high level degree of confidence if you're integrated into these channels and see what they're talking about, but you never really know until you get the data back, right? What I like to do, I kind of stole this working with sales enablement and RevOps and sales teams. When you look at the sales process, it's very clear, right? You've got stage, let's say you've got six sales stages. There's stage zero through stage six. Let's say you're following MedPick. It's very clear the entrance and exit criteria that is needed per sales stage. And also what resources sales enablement are giving them at each sales stage. So you've got like the discovery questions here and the pitch deck here, and you've got the competitive matrix here, et cetera. My one qualm that I typically run into within just marketing teams generally is we love tofu, mofu, bofu. When you talk to all these different stakeholders, everyone defines it differently. So the first thing is get everyone in a room, or like the main leaders per department, and say, when we say tofu, this is the prospect or customer's mindset in this stage. This is kind of what we want to communicate to them. And this is actually how we're going to target across the different channels. So you're targeting changes by channels capability. And do that for each stage. So we're all aligned on this is how we're going to target per channel. This is what we mean when we say tofu. And this is that individual's mindset when they're in this stage. When you do that, it all of a sudden becomes way, way easier to decide on the content you need per tofu, mofu, bofu, all the way from stage zero through stage six in your sales process. So I highly recommend starting there. The next thing I'll say is just have one good piece for tofu, mofu, bofu. There's two things I'll say, actually. Have one really good piece of content per stage. Do not over-engineer this. You don't need, we all love like a bunch of pieces of content per funnel stage because it looks good. Looks like we're doing a lot of work. What's way more effective? One really good piece. So top funnel, I typically like something that is more thought leadership based. The key here, which I have these resources at a Series B or Series C organization, I understand it may be harder earlier stage, is using someone who is actually a thought leader and has deep experience in the space. This I am able to share from 1Password. We have 2 global advisory CISOs, Dave Lewis and Wendy Nather. They're like the greatest people ever, but they have 20, 30 years of experience as a CISO. So we partner to create the content because it's going to be original. It's going to be so good. It's not a ChatGPT prompt. And so middle of funnel, you're going to want something that introduces your solution to the problem. Bottom of funnel is going to be something, I mean, this is basic, but something more hard CTA based. When I say hard CTA, it still needs to provide value. So when you're in bottom of funnel, don't just have your content piece be the demo page, right? Be something good. I typically like actual demos of the product where you can go through ungated. And then there's an option to talk to sales after it. But one really good piece of content per stage, make sure it's original. And it should be good because remember how we just talked about deeply understanding the use case? It should be really good. So you're going to want to map that out all the way to, at least starting all the way through stage 3. Of course, you need to validate this play. So you don't want to create all the resources for stage 3 through 6, which are typically later stage sales stages. So create it for those first 3 in addition to Tofu, Mofu, Bofu. But simple, really good, really effective content.
I also just think really hitting home, like you just need one really good asset. I've been binging so much acquisition.com content just as we've been growing and scaling over here, and every single video they put out has the same CTA, this assessment that then gets you access to a personalized roadmap for where your business is. I was like, everything, like their funnel is really clear. So I've been recently convicted that we actually have a terrible middle funnel. Like we're great at the awareness stage, and then if you go to our website, very clearly, like buy our stuff. We have nothing in the middle. So like we're in the process of building out a bunch of middle funnel type content. So you mentioned an ABM maturity model. I've got like a 90-page one right now that's in the editing process that is just like truly mapping all of it out and some assessments and things like that and templates that'll hopefully help people actually build ABM programs without having to hire us. But I mean, it's not gonna be that crazy. Like it's gonna be a resource library with like some really solid assets and templates and like content and courses. And like we'll probably run with that for like 2 years because it'll just hopefully be really good content. So like not crazy, but just like a clear place to point people that actually helps them where they are today.
That is so good. This is a selfish call out here. If you go to 1Password's website, you go under, I think it's 1Password. We have solutions pages. We have like 6 solutions pages. Our solutions marketing team did a craftful job where these solution pages are middle funnel content that are meant to tell the story. So like introduce the problem, introduce the different ways you can solve it, introduce how we solve it. And then there's linking to actual product briefs and videos that then go deeper and then allow you to kind of get to the bottom of funnel. But it's not like a traditional product marketing page where it's kind of like riddled with a bunch of talk to sales, book meeting buttons. It really tells that story, which has been an effective kind of middle of funnel piece for us. So selfish call out.
No, I mean, not selfish at all. Go check out that example. I love when people drop examples. So Miles, thank you for like walking through targeting, distribution, mapping out content. Obviously, I think we could all agree measurement of success is like, do we target actually engage on the content we expect them to engage with? Do they actually book a meeting and do they fly through pipeline? That's the standard things that I generally see from a measurement perspective. Anything to add on that front?
No, that is really it. We were talking about this backstage. Simplicity is so important. Keep it simple. Last thing you need is to introduce this crazy dashboard where the takeaway isn't clear. So yeah, pipeline, amount, and count generated. I personally like something around efficiency, like I said earlier. Like did we create more pipeline with the similar or less amount of money? And then something that I personally like to look at, these are lagging indicators, but the conversion of the account, which typically tells you the priority of this problem in their world. Yep. Like if it's a high conversion rate, you know, your sales team is effectively enabled and they're telling the story right, which is one component to it, but also that this is a problem. There's the prospect is motivated to solve. Leading indicators, like you said, like account engagement, things like that. Yeah. Keep it simple. Those, I agree. Right metrics.
I love it. Well, Last question for you is just pretty simple here of, we covered a lot, but as you also referenced, you've built this a couple times, you've got some scars. And what I really love about podcasting is the ability to steal other people's scars. So I'm curious, is there anything that if somebody's building an ABM program for the very first time that you wish you had known before you launched your first program?
Yeah, there's two things, one on the marketing side, one on the sales side. Marketing side, when you're introducing the use case or the verticalized use case, let's call it, to your marketing team, communicate that use case very clearly. Very clearly, like we said, first do the research, deeply understand it, which allows you to very clearly communicate it. What I found is when you do not deeply understand it, you do not clearly communicate it with your marketing stakeholders. What happens is when you work with content, after a few weeks, all of a sudden you start to kind of like stray away from the use case because they don't deeply understand it because they're working on a bunch of other stuff. And all of a sudden the output, maybe the webinar you create or the checklist, is sort of related to the use case, but it kind of drifted away. And that can happen from a web perspective. And so keep it simple, communicate it clearly. And when it starts to drift and you can kind of feel it start to drift from the use case, just be like, that's not the use case. here's the gong calls. This is the problem. This is how they're communicating it. This is exactly how we solve it. So deeply understand it, very, very clearly communicate it. Don't let it drift with the marketing team. And then from the sales side, so usually, like I said at the start, it's directed by the sales leader. That's important because usually I'd recommend there's an outbound arm to these ABM programs with a few reps. There's typically respect between the AE and the sales leader. That automatically gets you buy-in. Like, they will want to do it. I've had great sales leaders. They're like, oh, Christine or Jonathan, or they want to do this. Like, yes, I'm down. Let's do it. I trust them. The key here is being very clear in the resources available to them. I've made the mistake where I filled out this big, beautiful seismic page that has like all the different stages, a bunch of different content per stage. When it comes to the outbound, be like, here's the ICP card for this. Here's the personas. Here's the discovery questions. Here's the outbound strategy and the associated sequences templates. Go run with it. And usually enterprise AEs, like, you don't, they have buy-in, if they're aligned with their leader, like, they'll take it and they'll go do it for you. But what they're not going to do is they're not going to fish for a bunch of your resources. So you have to put it on a platter. You have to make their life as easy as possible, make it as easy as possible to launch this thing for them. And then they will go run with it. So make sure you're buttoned up and it's very clear the resources you have for the AEs when it comes to kind of the outbound arm for those target accounts.
I love it. Super practical. And overall, Miles, like, thank you for just kind of digging into your thought processes across multiple verticals, multiple programs, multiple companies. I think it's super helpful for anybody that's at that Series B, Series C stage that's really trying to go get more of their best customers based on use cases. So, Miles, if you want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
Yeah, just LinkedIn, depending on the season. Sometimes I'm busy. We've got two daughters. Sometimes I'm not busy, or not as busy, I should say. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I may respond or I may not, but eventually I will. I promise.
Love it. Well, again, Miles, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you want to do an even deeper dive on building out your ABM program, we're actually hosting our next ABM in a Day workshop on November 13th. It is a full 6 hours digging into all of the reasons ABM programs fail and exactly how to fix them. And I know what you're thinking, 6 hours is a huge time investment. Admittedly, it is, but it's taking 6 hours to ensure you nail the next 6 months of your ABM program. In case you're wondering, is it worth it? The last time we hosted it, we got a 9.3 out of 10 on our content. So I can guarantee this is a worthwhile time investment to ensure you nail your ABM program. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, go to scrappyabm.com/workshop to register today, and we'll see you on November 13th.